I really let you down this week. I can't spin it any other way. I didn't do a show immediately after the Texans-Chiefs game, and so now, on a Friday, I'm going to have to try to atone for my sins with an absolutely mega episode of the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. Just this one show this week, recapping the Texans game and previewing the Jets game all together. But as I've been thinking about it, a lot of the things I'm going to say right at the front end of the show about some things with Andy Reid and the Chiefs in that game in Houston are going to apply immediately coming up this week against the New York Jets. So as everything collides together here, I hope that with this mega episode of the show, I can atone for my sins for only producing this one episode, because everything is going to mix together, and this episode might just be 7.5 hours long due to how many tweets I have of people furious at what happened in Houston. Looking ahead, what's going to happen with the Jets in Kansas City? I finally, after a long week, am ready to go. Andy Reid must adapt his philosophy for how the Kansas City Chiefs offense is going to function. The future of this Chiefs team, of this Chiefs offense, depends on Andy Reid's willingness to change his philosophy. Forgive my crippling cynicism here, but I'm not feeling great about those chances. The Kansas City Chiefs losing in Houston, that's acceptable. But that offensive performance that the Chiefs put out there, with those weapons, with Andy Reid, with two offensive coordinators, the way they lost is not acceptable. And I got some tweets as I was trying to process all of this immediately after the game. And no, you're right, Twitter. Andy Reid did not commit those turnovers or penalties that ended up costing the Chiefs this game in Houston. That you're correct. But consistently, throughout all of football, the two traits that we link to coaching and to culture more than anything else are turnovers and penalties. It's why so many Chiefs fans can still laugh at the Raiders. It's why we can look at the Raiders and go, man, they're going to go 7-9 every year till all of us are dead, or worse. If they go 500, they'll have a parade in Oakland. We say that because we look at the coaching and the ownership and the history of the Oakland Raiders, and it boils down to poorly timed turnovers and stupid penalties. That's a culture thing. We do that for Oakland all the time. Right now, with this game in Houston, Andy Reid and this Chiefs offense had an incredible problem with penalties and turnovers. In some ways, this just keeps getting more maddening to me, because Houston has some very good players on both sides of the football. A very good, young, talented team. They got embarrassed by the Patriots on Thursday Night Football in New England. But Houston has some really talented players that can really disrupt a game. And the Chiefs handled those guys just fine. J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney, mostly J.J. Watt, Whitney Mercilus, those guys showed up in a couple of places, but they didn't do anything catastrophic. J.J. Watt's best play of the game was falling on a snap that went over Alex Smith's head. DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller are a couple of dangerous, physical, fast young receivers, man. Those guys, I would cut off a pinky toe to just absorb both of those guys onto this Chiefs roster. Chiefs handled them just fine. Peters got burnt. There was a touchdown that looked bad. He also had two picks. Defense held it up. The Chiefs dealt with those problems. They dealt with those players. And still lost this game in a really, really ugly fashion. Alex Smith had a bad game, had a handful of very bad throws, just as he did in the first 50 minutes of the game against the Chargers. When did Alex Smith look best in both of the first two games of this year? I'm going to answer that. It's not a rhetorical question, but think about it for just a second, because I think it's clear. When did Alex Smith look best in both games this season so far? It was when Andy Reid changed his play calling method. He changed his attitude. Andy Reid went into F it mode and said, well, sure, what are we going to lose? What's going to happen here? We're going to have a larger margin of loss? Fine, air it out. Move more quickly. Hustle to the line. Keep the defense on their heels. We've got to go. You've got to make something happen because we're running out of time. When that happened, that's the best Alex Smith in the offense looked against the Chargers all day. It's the best that Alex Smith and the Chiefs looked against the Texans all day. But in week one, the Chiefs got extremely lucky with how that played out, with that timing, with the course of events. Not lucky in a way that invalidates how good they were, but they could have been that good 100 times and have only had everything actually play out that way a dozen of those times. I mean, that last stretch in the Chargers game was very, very good and also very, very lucky. They were very, very fortunate for a lot of the breaks that they had. They were able to even have the time to make that comeback. Things go wrong in that situation all the time. I think we can accept they got lucky and were good in the Chargers game. But I would certainly argue that the Chiefs waited too long in the Chargers game to move to that type of offense. Because if just a couple of things go differently, they lose that game. They're 0-2 right now. They have that one ball to Travis Kelce where he just scoots past the first down marker on I think it was fourth down in the Chargers game. If that goes just over his fingertips, they're 0-2. So they were good, but got lucky. They waited too long. You move that offense quicker, you get the defense on their heels more quickly. All of a sudden, that game's not such a big deal. It's not so threatening. Against the Houston Texans, if the Chiefs would have been moving the ball like they were in 100% total desperation mode, if they would have been moving the ball like that even just since halftime, the Chiefs win that game by 2 touchdowns. They pull ahead by 2 touchdowns in the third quarter and never look back. Does that mode of offense, does that type of play calling, does that attitude work in the first half for this Chiefs team, for Andy Reid? Would it work in the first half? If they came out playing that type of football, that type of slightly reckless, like Alex Smith version of reckless football, in the first half, if they came out firing just like that and committed to that type of offense for a whole game, would that work? Can we just try it and find out? Because that's where I am right now. And I think the answer to that is yes, by the way. I think that's why we see really, really good offenses in football, and why that's how we see teams rise to the top of the league. Because you get guys, not just quarterbacks, because frankly, Alex Smith looked scared a lot of this Texans game. It was one of his worst games as a Chief after following one of his best sequences as a Chief in the end of the Chargers game. Alex Smith played very poorly. But I don't think Alex Smith is scared to start off with that pace. Because when he looks the least scared is when he doesn't have a chance to be. Whenever they're just moving the ball as quickly as possible and the defense is the one backpedaling, Alex Smith seems to get some confidence from that, at least so far this year. Because they get a little bit of the edge and then just keep chipping away at it. They finally have the offensive talent to take that edge and make something from it. And maybe the Chiefs try it and it won't work. I'm willing to wait and find out if that's how it goes. Because at this point, this Chiefs team has to do something different offensively. The Chargers defense is not that good. The Texans defense is not that good. The Chiefs offense has the ability to do that. And that's why the reason this game is so infuriating in the long run and why I don't think it's overreacting to be this upset about it is because this is the game we can look back on when the Chiefs finish the year 9-7 and lose a wild card spot to Houston, or when they finish 10-6 and get the 5 seed and the 11-5 Broncos get home field advantage. These games matter. Even if this was like against the Falcons or something, especially in the AFC, if there's a tiebreaker with Houston at any point, this is on the line. But every NFL game, it has a significant weight to it. If you're a Royals fan listening to the show, this isn't Joaquin Soria blowing one game, you know, in the 90th game of the year. It's not that heavy. We see this at the end of every season whenever those wild card graphics start popping up during the TV broadcasts, right? You go, okay, we've got the division leaders here, and all right, the Bengals are 9-5, and the Steelers are leading the division, and the Jets are 8-6, and the Chiefs are 8-6, and the Ravens are 8-6, and we're just being bombarded with those things. And we go, man, if the Chiefs could have just been 9-5 instead of 8-6 right now, we'd really be feeling pretty good. I mean, maybe they have a chance of winning the division because of the way the schedule ends. Maybe there's something here. Losses like this one are the reason that those graphics at the end of the year are so infuriating. I am not going to be this upset whenever the Chiefs go to Pittsburgh and lose in a couple of weeks. I'm expecting that now. I will continue to expect it. If the Chiefs do lose it on like a stupid last second penalty in a game that they never should have really been that competitive in, that will be infuriating. But if they go and lose by 17 points or whatever, I'm going to go, yeah, that's about right. I'm expecting that. But in this game, for the Chiefs to be against a team that is not as good and to lose it based off of turnovers and penalties, and to watch Andy Reid have an offense that has worked for 2 weeks in a row, but he's only used it for like 15 minutes of those 2 weeks combined, that is infuriating to me. Because that's the difference between a 10-6 team and an 11-5 team. The difference between a 9-7 team and an 8-8 team. It's those stupid little losses to AFC South teams at the beginning of the season. And it's so preventable, and it's so fixable. And it's penalties and turnovers and not having the willingness to try to move the ball a little more quickly. Let's run through the recap here. Then we'll dissect this. But man, I hate watching the Chiefs lose games where you go, this was too close. They should have had this. They trim up a couple of the errors here. They move the ball a little more quickly. Andy Reid goes out of his ways a little sooner than we expected him to and makes a couple of changes that gives the offense a chance to get the defense on its heels. The defense handled this game. Penalties, turnovers, the offense falling apart in a game that truly matters. Houston Texans 19, Kansas City Chiefs 12. If I neglected to mention the fact that the Chiefs scored 12 points, there's a reminder. 12. And frankly, it looked like it was going to start off a little bit worse than it actually did. Texans started with the ball, and on 3rd and 7, they hit a 17-yard completion to Will Fuller. Holly and Ford both came from the same side, which I thought was interesting. And Gaines got beat by Fuller on a route across the middle, which was a theme last week with the Chargers also. Then on a play-action pass, Osweiler aired it out to Fuller after totally burning Marcus Peters, and Eric Berry could not get over in time to help. That was infuriating. The defense held him up on 3rd and goal in the last 3rd and goal from the 2. And Marcus Peters redeemed himself with an interception to stop what looked like a surefire touchdown drive. So Peters gets the ball back on a beautiful interception, completely atoning for his previous sins of getting burnt so horrifically. Then back on offense, Alex Smith went to Travis Kelce, first offensive possession, I should say. Smith went to Kelce and then to Conley for a first down, then hit Kelce for another first down on a nice 12-ish yard strike, both small chunk plays. That's how this offense can thrive if they're going to not be moving more quickly, but even when they do move more quickly, those small chunk plays will move you down the field. But I digress. Now on 1st and 10, Jadeveon Clowney swatted a screen pass away, which was a little bit unnerving at the time. On 3rd and 6, Mitch Morse snapped the ball over Alex Smith's head, and J.J. Watt just ran past Mitchell Schwartz and recovered the loose ball. I think a snap over a quarterback's head is one of the most infuriating turnovers in football. I'm being furious a lot today. Because it's something that happens dozens of times a game, a shotgun snap that just goes fine, and there's no reward there, there's no risk. It's not like an interception going for, you know, for a guy that you thought was open 30 yards down the field gets picked off. It's just something super simple that gets screwed up. So Houston gets the ball back. Peters gets abused by DeAndre Hopkins for a touchdown and got called for pass interference. And I don't know if it was defensive pass interference, but it also wasn't offensive pass interference, which Marcus Peters seemed to want called. And he just got whipped again. And it's 7-0 Houston right out of the gate. And frankly, that's about all Houston would have needed. That's also the only touchdown of the game, which is incredible. Chiefs offense responded by doing nothing, although Alex Smith did air out a bomb after catching Whitney Merciless offside, and he saw the flag and just took a shot, which was smart. It was picked off, but that didn't obviously matter because there was the penalty. It moved the Chiefs to 3rd and 2, and there was a celebration penalty that wasn't enforced because to enforce it, they would have had to have allowed the interception. It was a little confusing, but it worked out, trust me. Anyway, the pass to Kelce was on 3rd and 2 was broken up, and the Chiefs punted, and it might have been better for them to have just taken the interception and the penalty, but once again, just going to move on from that. On defense, Philip Gaines stayed absolutely step for step with Will Fuller on a deep ball, and Houston ended up punting back to Tyreek Hill, who caught it while running backwards, turned around and went from one sideline to the other for a 16-yard gain on something that would have been like 6 yards for a guy like Frankie Hammond. This was a theme throughout the day. Tyreek Hill is very fast. Then Hill ends up getting a handoff starting up the next drive, And it would have actually had a lane if Ja Reed and Ross Travis would have held their man up for like a half a second. But Macklin then gets open and drops a first down, and Smith missed him again on 3rd and 11. Chiefs get the ball back. That's one of the first drops that Macklin has had as a Chief, and it was a drop, and it was very sad. Macklin did not have a good game here. Apparently, whenever he had like a personal day off from practice earlier in the week, he had a close friend die, and that maybe that's a factor in this game where he was not firing on all cylinders in this game, which is understandable, but unfortunate for the Chiefs offense. Back on defense, the defensive line actually caved in and stopped the run in the backfield, which was nice. Marcus Peters wrecked Braxton Miller on a short catch, and Derek Johnson busted through the line to sack Brock Osweiler. It was like a three-step, really nice defensive stand for a Chiefs defense that actually needed that. And then after that, it was another really nice return for Tyreek Hill. That seemed like it could have been a time when the pace of the game started to change a little bit, but the offense couldn't do anything. And ended up getting in the field goal range here. Macklin almost hauled in a one-handed catch from Smith on a dart that missed. He could not haul it in, and it was an incompletion on Smith. That one was certainly not a drop. It was a pass too high to an open receiver. Then a check down into Kendrick West, got a couple yards, and Smith held the ball too long, and J.J. Watt got to him. Smith took the sack and made it a 53-yard field goal attempt, which should have been less than 50. But Santos absolutely nailed it. Somebody tweeted it might have been the straightest field goal they'd ever seen. Nailed it, tied his career long. A nice day for Cairo Santos. That's about it, though. 7-3 Houston at that time. Then back on defense, Ron Parker had a really fantastic pass breakup. Then there was a run stop on 3rd and 6. Steven Nelson was all over Braxton Miller, but Brock Osweiler did not see an open DeAndre Hopkins after whipping Marcus Peters again, which was good because that would have been a disaster. Also, by the way, just if you've zoned out at any point in the show, tune in for this. Steven Nelson played 90 snaps on Sunday. That's all but two defensive snaps and a bunch of special teams work. For actual analysis instead of just recap right here, that's a good sign, at least that they trust Steven Nelson. And he held up against Braxton Miller just fine in this game. We talked a little bit last week about how the Chiefs could deal with Braxton Miller more. And how he was dealt with in week one by having to deal with some more physical guys in front of him. I didn't see a ton of that in this game. I think more than anything else, Steven Nelson just hung around with him. So in an ideal world, it seems like the Chiefs might have their number one guy and their slot guy, and Philip Gaines also, dealing with Will Fuller and some DeAndre Hopkins in this game, had a pretty nice showing. Overall, it was a good showing for a defense, and especially for a secondary that looked so atrocious against Keenan Allen and made the entire Chargers backfield look so fantastic in week one. It was a good showing, and I feel better. I have my concerns about Marcus Peters. He's going to give up a touchdown and get a pick, like, in every game. I mean, not actually, but it's going to feel that way a lot. Bomb touchdown on Peters. Oh, there's a pick in the red zone. But if Philip Gaines can be the sturdier, more consistent guy, which is what Sean Smith really was, is just the guy that you don't test very often because it usually ends in a very difficult window to get the ball into. If he can be that consistent guy, Steven Nelson can take care of the slot, and Marcus Peters can be kind of your gambler. Sometimes the gambler is going to make you a big play, is going to win you a game, and sometimes it's going to cost you a game. That was not the case here. He was supremely useful in a game that they lost. But I could deal with that secondary. Now, Eric Berry still cannot cover anyone, and he hasn't been able to for his entire career, and they shouldn't have franchise tagged him, and I've been saying that since they franchise tagged him. I just want to make sure I'm still driving that bandwagon. But Ron Parker has been pretty good. He's gotten beat a couple of times, but overall I feel good about him as the second safety back there. The Chiefs secondary, I think those starting three guys at the corner spots and Nelson is the slot guy, I feel like that development is going to continue to roll on pretty nicely here. And this week against the Jets is going to be an enormous test for all three of them. But overall, I'm feeling better and better about it, even though the Chiefs' third-round pick, Kavari Russell, is not on the team anymore, which still kind of blows my freaking mind. Anyway, a lot of snaps for Steven Nelson in this game. This time on the punt, the Texans punted away from Hill. Smith kicked off the drive by skipping a screen pass off the turf, which was amazing. Spencer Ware, though, declared a state of emergency and ran 25 yards through traffic. He is still a bowling ball out of a cannon. Then Fulton and Fisher stacked a couple of penalties to move the Chiefs to 2nd and 19, which was an incredible blast. Smith scrambled and threw an incredible throw to Demetrius Harris, who caught it and kept heading downfield. then had the ball punched out as he went to the ground. It was ruled an incompletion after a review, which was disappointing because it was a great play. Then on 3rd and 19, Smith took a sack, and it probably would have been better for the second time to have just had the turnover instead of actually having punted it. The Texans got the ball after the punt, and Marcus Peters defended a pass to Fuller really nicely, and then was penalized for taunting after wagging his finger. And I was driving home from work at 8:10 whenever I heard this happen. And Mitch Holtis and Kendall Gammon were crushing Peters, saying, you can't get this penalty. It's half of an ejection. You get two personal fouls now. You get thrown out of the game. 15-yard penalty. You can't do that to your team, blah, blah, blah. And I was thinking, man, I mean, he's got to control that. Peters has just got to get that under control. Well, I got home and actually saw what Peters did, and it was like the Dikembe Mutombo not-in-my-house finger wag. And Patrick Quaife on Twitter pointed this amazing thing out. So if you're furious at Marcus Peters, please tune in here. Earlier in the day, in the morning, the NFL's Twitter account used a GIF of J.J. Watt wagging his finger in an NFL official Twitter post. A GIF of J.J. Watt wagging his finger. J.J. Watt is not being penalized for wagging his finger. And you could give several reasons for why that is, and we would all be guessing, but I'm going to go ahead and say that that difference is not just because J.J. Watt is a defensive end, but I will move on for now. I'm just not going to crush Marcus Peters for wagging his finger whenever J.J. Watt does it and becomes a mascot for the league. That's all I'll say for there. For now, the Texans ended up driving and getting a field goal, which was honestly a break for the defense. That penalty really did kill him on that drive. Ended up being 10-3 Houston then. Chiefs got the ball back before the half, put together a nice drive, and Spencer Ware broke through the line into Houston territory and then fumbled the ball. I believe his first lost fumble in his entire career in any level, he said afterwards. Houston scooped it up, returned it quite a ways, somehow only ended up getting a field goal out of that one, and then the Chiefs, showing signs of aggressiveness again, called a timeout to get the ball back. And did get it back again with 1:08 left in the half. Then Smith scrambled on 2nd and 10 and was strip sacked from behind for another fumble. So here's a summary with what the Chiefs did in the first half. Chiefs offense. The drives ended in a fumble, a punt, a punt, a field goal, a punt, a fumble, and a fumble. That's atrocious. Holy, holy atrocious. On the other side of the half, Tyreek Hill was back for kickoffs, and I want to say right now, I am 100% cool with keeping Hill back for kickoffs. Frees up a roster spot. You want to cut now Davis or D'Anthony Thomas or another, you know, top five draft pick, fine with me. Whatever the Chiefs will feel like doing that day, if it's cutting Davis or Thomas or, I don't know, DJ White for some reason, just some inexplicable reason. Because that's how they... Okay, you get it. Anyway, the next good play for the Chiefs happened when the Chiefs punted on 4th and 1, which was also infuriating at the time. And Tyreek Hill made the tackle on that as well, which was great. Then at 3rd and 6 for the Texans, Fuller got wide open in his zone and scooped it off the turf for a first down. That was maddening. Peters almost pulled in a second pick of the day after that, but DeAndre Hopkins played defensive back and broke up the pass. Then on 3rd and 17, the Chiefs got a stop. Hill had a decent punt return ruined by a Ross Travis block in the back. The Chiefs' offense still couldn't find anything in this game. First down, Smith had legitimately like 8 seconds because the Texans only rushed 3, but he couldn't find anybody. Aired out to Macklin, had it knocked away. Next play, Smith had 0 seconds. 4th sack of the day on Alex Smith. And then on 3rd and 18, they did the thing that is my favorite, a check down to Tyreek Hill. Although in this case, at least a check down to Tyreek Hill is a check down to somebody who can maybe turn the ball upfield after catching it. At this point in the game, I offered a incredibly valuable observation. 7 quarters into the season, the Chiefs' offense had looked good for one of them. Reed has weapons, he has his quarterback, he has 2 offensive coordinators. This is a disaster. Back on defense, 3rd and 8, D. Ford made Osweiler step up, and Tom Bahali was there to get the sack. That was nice, and the Texans ended up punching. But here's something on Tom Bahali. Once again, if you've zoned out, pay attention to this. Tom Bahali, on 72 defensive snaps, was on the field for 31 of them. He is a part-time player, and that's discouraging for a guy that's now on the books for a couple of years, just gave a new contract to, That's bad news. And I know the Chiefs were probably feeling pretty desperate because they knew Justin Houston was going to miss a whole lot of time. He's going to miss the first half of the season or so, at least, I would guess. But certainly 6 games. That's the minimum. Or 6 weeks. But I would say probably 8 games is a safe bet. I know they were desperate because Houston was out, D Ford kind of stinks, and they didn't really have anything else to bet on at that point. But betting on Tamba Ali seems like a really dangerous gamble right now because he's just a part-time player, and even in his part-time stints, he's not been very effective. A holding penalty moved the offense back. Macklin failed to bring an immediately difficult catch. He could have had it, but it wasn't a drop. Then there was a nice 2-yard pass, a run for nothing, and a punt back, and then really a heck of a hit by DeMarcus Robinson on coverage. So the Chiefs continued to make their only plays of the day on special teams and not counting Marcus Peters, who immediately got the ball back for the Chiefs because Gaines got beat by Hopkins and then Hopkins got 35 yards on that play. That was discouraging. But right after that, the next play, Peters picked off Osweiler on DeAndre Hopkins. Chiefs get the ball back again. And I was watching this game just waiting and waiting. The defense kept giving the ball back to the Chiefs offense, kept giving them chances, and I just kept waiting for anything to happen, for any spark to try to recreate what happened against the Chargers, and it just kept not happening. Although for a second, there was this play here. Smith and Charkendrick West ran the option, and West got a first down and then some. That was encouraging, and then this sequence happened. Run for a loss of 1 yard, screen for a loss of 1 yard, then on 3rd and 12, Albert Wilson for 7. Just end my life, please. I didn't need to see that. Albert Wilson. We're going to talk about Albert Wilson later. Just stick around for the Albert Wilson talk. I know you can't wait. Anyway, the Santos kicked the field goal and make it 13-6, and then kicked the kickoff out of bounds, which was atrocious. Anyway, Houston got the run game going. Then on 3rd and 3, it's a quick 6-yard strike to Hopkins for the first down. 2nd and 9, they threw it 14 yards to Will Fuller, and the pass was past the first down marker, which is a novel concept. Where I feel like the 2014 Chiefs should have learned by now. But again, when it's Albert Wilson you're throwing to, maybe just give up, I guess. I don't know. Chiefs ended up holding the Texans a 31-yard field goal, made it 16-6. Get the ball back again, just desperate for anything to happen here. Spoiler alert, no touchdowns at least. First down after a nice return from Hill, that'd be a broken record. Then a 34-yard pass to Spencer Ware, followed by a bad-slash-horrifically-scary pass, and then a pass to Albert Wilson that Wilson should have had but didn't have because he's Albert Wilson. We'll get to him later. Then on 3rd and 10, the nice 16-yard strike to Jeremy Macklin, the first time the Chiefs had gotten into the 20-yard line, into the red zone on the day. By the way, Spencer Ware has more receiving yards this year than Julio Jones, than DeAndre Hopkins, than Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham Jr., Mike Evans, or Brandon Marshall. All of those guys have fewer receiving yards than Spencer Ware, which is kind of amazing. Then on first down, inside the 20, Chiefs had a short, terrible pass to Chris Conley. Second down, Smith had all day and had Spencer Ware literally completely alone in the end zone. Didn't find him. Third down, chased around the pocket, incomplete. Kicked a field goal, 16-9 Texans. Boy, that was fun, wasn't it, guys? Texans then drove the ball. The Chiefs called the timeout before 3rd and 6 at midfield. On a quick snap, though, Osweiler flung it down the sideline. The defense wasn't ready. Gaines missed a tackle. Derek Johnson wasn't in place. First down, that's when the game ended, in my mind. Texans got back to 3rd and 17 after a Houston penalty, and Osweiler threw a bullet to Hopkins over the top of Phillip Gaines. No first down, but back into field goal range. And the field goal, maybe tipped, just eked over the crossbar. That was the point the game felt extra over. Tyreek Hill took the kick back for touchdown afterwards, though, which would have been thrilling. And I gloss over it that way because he is dynamic. He was an inch away from doing that all day long. And it was completely wiped off by a special teams penalty, which was the absolute worst. Special teams penalties always are so painful because it's incredibly dynamic plays. Usually, the penalties also don't make or break the touchdown. In this case, it didn't. And Andy Reid even said that the guy who got the penalty called on him, against him, he flopped on the play. The Texans guy had flopped on the play to draw the flag, and it worked. And without that penalty, the Chiefs, Hill still would have run it back, and the points would have just counted. That was infuriating. And the offense drove it, but it just didn't matter anymore. Kelsey got mugged in the end zone, but it didn't matter. The Chiefs jumped off sides twice, and it didn't matter. Cairo Santos kicked the field goal to make it 19-12, and it didn't matter because Hopkins recovered the onside kick. And that's how it felt all day long, man. That's how the offense felt the entire time. Drove a little bit, but it didn't really matter. Somebody got mugged, but it didn't really matter. Santos got a field goal, great, but it didn't really matter because it ended in a field goal every single time. A 19-12 final score is inexcusable whenever we go, you know what, I think right now the offense is the strength of this team. How dumb are we? The offense being the strength of this team ended up with 12 points in Houston, and not because the defense was great. It wasn't because J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus and Jadeveon Clowney just scorched everybody. So the offense got a bunch of penalties and turned the ball over just too many times. 3 turnovers, 9 penalties for 77 yards, and just an atrocious offensive performance on so many levels. Alex Smith, 20 for 37 for 186 yards. Charkhandrick West ended up running the ball 6 for 61. Spencer Ware, 10 for 57. Macklin, 6 for 68. Some of those numbers, especially with the number of receptions there, and the yards per carry for those running backs is great. But it was just an absolutely anemic offense all day long. And even though the defense held up its end of the bargain, where Justin March Lillard, formerly Justin March, had a really nice game. 8 tackles, 4 of them by himself, a tackle for a loss. Derek Johnson, 11 tackles, 8 by himself. Marcus Peters with 2 picks. Phillip Gaines got beat a couple times, but really held his own pretty well. A lot of improvement. Dontari Poe had his best game of the season, obviously in 2 games, but after really struggling against the Chargers, there were some bright spots on the defense in this game, but the offense was just absolute darkness. Now onto something that's become one of my favorite recurring segments that will stick around for this whole season, I can guarantee that. Your takes and takeaways. After every single game of the year, you can tweet me at JB Briscoe, use the hashtag RTKTT for Roughing the Kicker takes and takeaways, and I will put your feedback on the notes for this show and respond to your takes and your takeaways, as the name implies, on the podcast recapping the game. First up, Miles McLaren on Twitter said, Andy Reid seems like he crafts his game plan too much and the offense only becomes effective when it has to be simplified. I love this theory. I love it. Andy Reid might be a mad scientist, evil genius, and by how difficult it is historically to pick up his playbook and for guys to get used to his system and everything, that all makes a lot of sense, that maybe it is too... His game plan is put together with tweezers, but the actual game is played with chainsaws. And if that's the case here, whenever he just gets a little more reckless, it makes it become a little more simplified, then that game plan becomes a little bit more effective. Or in some cases, a lot more effective. Whenever Andy Reid has less time to overthink it, less time to try to plan every single step, and the guys on the field actually play, then in that case, maybe talent finally wins. He can't simplify it so much that the Chiefs lose the coaching advantage that they have in a lot of these cases and a lot of these matchups. But maybe that's the step of saying, listen, Andy, just peel it back a little bit. And look over the New England Patriots for a second. They just won 3 straight games with 3 different quarterbacks, or with 2 different quarterbacks, their second and third string guy. In 3 games, they won with Jimmy Garoppolo, and then he got hurt, and then they won with whoever the third stringer is, and then now he's hurt. And maybe Julian Edelman plays quarterback, I don't know. But this is all while Tom Brady is out. They were winning football games. And I don't think that their rookie third stringer, obviously a rookie third stringer couldn't come into Andy Reid's system and win a game like that. That's never going to happen. It's too much. So I like the idea that Reid becomes most effective whenever his game plan is simplified a little bit more. I think that's a really interesting take there by Miles. From at KT Priest on Twitter, Albert Wilson does not need to be on the field. I'm concerned about the talent evaluation and the decisions being made. No way that Wilson is better than Streeter or DeAnthony Thomas. What do they see? That is a very good question. I'm baffled too. Because if you want experience, if you want a guy with experience in the NFL, give me Rod Streeter. If you want speed and youth, give me DeAnthony Thomas, or give me Tyreek Hill, or give me something. Let me get hit by a car instead. Because Albert Wilson has fallen off a cliff. And he seems like a totally different player, and maybe it's just perception, but I think actually watching him, he seems like a totally different player than he was whenever he was an undrafted free agent, really fighting to be on the team. Lately, he hasn't gotten open, he has not gotten as many targets because he can't get as much separation, and the ball can be in his range, within the range of his wingspan, and he does not pull it in. And that's been happening throughout this throughout these couple of games, throughout the whole preseason, and throughout like the second half of last year. And it seems like a very sharp decline. And maybe it just boils down to our problem as fans who want to analyze everything, as the fanalists or whatever. maybe we saw him as an undrafted free agent, and he still had those alligator arms whenever he would start to, he would, you know, just give up on actually stretching his arms the whole way out to catch a ball, as we saw at the end of last, towards the end of last season. Maybe he did that as an undrafted free agent, and we just didn't care to see it because we wanted to be optimistic about an undrafted rookie free agent being a useful wide receiver in this Chiefs offense. It was so anemic and needed receiver help so badly. Maybe we overlooked the flaws for the sake of, like, oh, here's some sparks. Maybe this Albert guy is going to do it for us. And then now that we expect him to be better, and he's not getting better, and he's at the best just stayed stagnant, now we see the flaws more clearly, and we start to overlook the positives that he brings. I think that's a chance, but frankly, I don't think that's the answer. I think the answer is that Albert Wilson has gotten more scared to reach out for the ball, or has lost a little bit of a spark or something. I can't sit from my end of this and say, like, oh, his work ethic is worse, or he doesn't care as much. I don't know that, but there is something severely different. It's either our perception of Albert Wilson or he's playing differently. And either way, as we watch him right now and evaluate him for where he is right now in his career and on this team, I can't believe the Chiefs gave up on Rod Streeter for this. And I'm upset that they are giving up on DeAnthony Thomas, carrying him on the roster but making him inactive, and keeping him inactive for the sake of Albert Wilson. If DeAnthony Thomas is on the roster, give him a shot to run those Albert Wilson plays. Give Tyreek Hill the shot if you want to. Because at this point, Albert Wilson doesn't do anything exceptionally. He does a handful of things okay. He's okay at several things. He's not exceptional at anything. From Andy Nielsen, at Andy Nielsen on Twitter. Losing to a revamped playoff team on the road by 7 points with when sloppy and missing Justin Houston and Jamal Charles. I'm okay with the L. Just have to bounce back at home. This is a nice, measured response that I don't hate it. But it still bothers me for all the reasons that I mentioned at the top of the show. It was sloppy, but that matters. They're missing Houston and Charles, but that this game still matters. A lot of teams are missing a lot of guys. A lot of teams have sloppy starts. But at the end of the year, when you're looking back and you're saying, all right, where does this team fit in the playoff race? Whenever you're 9-5 or 8-5, looking at those last 3 weeks of the season, saying, all right, where do we go from here? How do we make this team a wild card team, a division winner, any sort of contender whatsoever, you're going to look back in this game and go, man, wouldn't you love to have another shot at that game in Houston? And yes, missing Charles in Houston matters. That's obviously a huge factor, but we're going to have to get used to it. We'll talk about Jamal Charles later on, but Justin Houston's out for a while. If that was an excuse for the Chiefs without Justin Houston for as long as Justin Houston will be out, it would have been an excuse for all the games they won at the end of last season, and it would be an excuse for the first half of this year, and maybe more. I mean, whenever he had a surgery, there was talk that he might miss this entire season. That was on the table. And to that point, I think it might still be, frankly. So I can't just be okay with taking the L here. And if it is followed up by a loss at home against the Jets, then this is all going to become more and more real every single game as it goes. At @flip_ on Twitter. The offense was bad. The Peters pass interference on the touchdown was bogus. Holding on the return was bogus. No call on the Kelsey touchdown attempt was bogus. The refs were a 14-point swing. I disagree on the Peters pass interference on the touchdown. It didn't matter. They were scoring there regardless, and it was not pass interference on Hopkins in my mind. I disagree with that. Holding on the return was very... I would have been happy to see that not penalized just in any football game. I think those things happen all the time. I would agree with you on that. And no call on Kelsey was also pretty bad. But that, to me, does not actually come together to create a 14-point swing. It comes together to create a couple of opportunities the Chiefs would have had a chance to capitalize on. And frankly, with what I saw from this offense, I wouldn't have counted on them to actually pull it through. From Ty Declare, @TyDeclare44 on Twitter, Andy Reid needs to grow a pair, and this offense has to figure out what it is instead of trying to be everything, pound and pass. Also, Marcus Peters will get burnt, but he will battle back. It's the life of a corner, out of pass rush, and Kansas City will start rolling. We're going to go to the mad as hell Andy Reid division in a second. That's a nice teaser. I agree so wholeheartedly this offense needs to figure out what it is. And maybe that gets fixed a little bit when Jamal Charles comes back, and maybe he's the guy that starts running some of those Albert Wilson routes. Maybe that's where Charles becomes most useful on this offense, because we think Ware and West can hold down the backfield, but the Chiefs have a lot of room for improvement in Albert Wilson's role, and then Charles can move around a lot. Maybe the identity is found more there. Right now, though, the Chiefs have a solid number one receiver. He's not a top 10 receiver, but he's a number one receiver. They've got in Chris Conley, they got a number two guy that's developing still. And that's kind of, I mean, there are a couple options there. And they've got a really good group of tight ends. Maybe the second best group in football behind the Patriots as far as tight ends go. The passing game should be more effective than it has been these last couple of weeks, except for the good pieces at the end of the games. And the run game has some really, really strong weapons. I don't understand how this offense fails to find traction, because even the offensive line was not great against Houston, but it wasn't atrocious. It had some really bad moments, but bad moments don't make you fail to score a touchdown. Not in that way. I mean, they can. Bad moments can, but where the offensive line did collapse should not have been a death sentence to the entire offense, the entire game. But I move on from that to say I agree, though, that this offense has got to find some traction. It's got to find some identity. And I'm afraid the identity is just going to be bipolar Andy Reid offense. From @Ryan_Landreth, for some reason, this is one of the three most annoying losses I've ever watched as a Chiefs fan. And I kind of get it. Like, it's not one of the three most meaningful, obviously. It's not one of the three actually worst. But it is kind of infuriating because, again, it's a game they should have won that they gave up on turnovers and penalties against a team in the AFC that's going to be trying to fight for a wild card spot, and it's going to be one of those losses that you look back on and go, man, the Chiefs have that game then, this team makes the playoffs instead of missing it by just a game, or this team wins the division instead of being the 5 or 6 seed in the wild card. So I'm totally okay with it being a super annoying loss. From Keyshawn Brown, @ChiefPriest_25 on Twitter, Dee Ford set the edge and got some pressure. I think he's progressing, and Tyreek Hill might be the second coming of Dante Hall. Yes, Dee Ford did have a couple of plays in this game that were encouraging. His pass rushing, frankly, didn't get a whole lot better. Someone on Twitter was pointing this out, and I can't remember who, and I'm sorry. But his run defense actually seemed to take a couple steps forward these last couple of weeks, but he still hasn't gotten pressure very consistently. He hasn't added any moves to his repertoire, which is discouraging. And yes, Tyreek Hill is absolutely explosive. All right, let's go now to the I'm mad as hell Andy Reid division of the takes and takeaways. Ray Hines, @BigTurfGuy. Andy can take retirement for all I care. He'll take, quote, responsibility, and nothing will change. Miles, @MilesMcLaren. Keep him as a figurehead like the Queen of England and nothing more. He has too much pride as an offensive genius. He needs his play calling rights stripped. I love all of this. I love the idea that we can send Andy Reid into retirement, or no, wait, let's make him the Queen of England for the Chiefs. What a wonderful image. I love it so much. I do think Andy Reid has too much pride in the offensive genius thing, or maybe he's too possessive of it to allow anything to change. He's trying to stick to the formula, you know, and listen, if you're Andy Reid, I get it, man. Stick to the formula that's won you all those Super Bowl rings. It's worked so many times before. Like, his hands have to be weighed down from all of the bling on him. He's got a ring for every finger, right? An NFC Championship ring for every finger, at least? Just one of those? Well, I mean, he's got a hell of a mustache, right? If you like the show and all of the sass and the information that it might bring, you can follow me on Twitter @JBBriscoe. Like the show on Facebook @facebook.com/RTKshow. Just search Roughing the Kicker. Make sure you subscribe to the show wherever you subscribe to podcasts. It's always worth it because this show has a sporadic schedule sometimes. I don't want you to ever miss this show. And you can support me by leaving reviews on things on any podcast app, but preferably on iTunes. People find shows that way all the time, leaving a 5-star review and say that it's the best Chiefs show you've ever heard in your life. Or be honest, either one is fine. But if you want to support the show in a different way, you can do that at patreon.com/RTK. That's patreon.com/RTK. Patreon is kind of like a virtual tip jar. Instead of serving you food, though, I'm serving you podcasts about the Chiefs that you can listen to anytime you like, for as long as you like, as many times as you like, totally for free. And if you decide that, hey, this server is worth tipping, you can do that at Patreon. And you can donate a little bit of money every month. You can do $20, $10, $5, more than $20 if you feel like it. I mean, that's fine with me. If anybody out there is rolling with real fat stacks and just trying to throw money away for a Chiefs podcast, I will take it. You can throw it at me and I will catch it. I'm like Albert Wilson. And a lot of people already listening to this show have been supporting this show through Patreon for quite a while, so I will now say my absolute thank yous to the $20 group, Don Beal, @DonBeal32 on Twitter, Andy Simpson and Steven Smith, Randy Singh at Randy underscore Singh underscore, and Ray Hines at Big Turf Guy. That's the $20 club supporting this show every single month. Hugely, hugely grateful to them. And to the $10 group, which is Ty Declare at Ty Declare 44 and Christine Roadlander at C Roadlander on Twitter, and Todd Sullivan at Tito Solovino, which is going to be a lot of fun to say, hopefully, throughout this entire Chiefs season, because that's my favorite Twitter handle here to say, I think. And in the $5 group, it is always Josh Beadle. I cannot say thank you enough to those people supporting this show financially over at patreon.com/RTK, the virtual tip jar, to support this show, serving you free podcasts. If you'd rather try to make money than give away money, I totally understand, and I have someone giving me money to tell you to go play to take their money over at mybookie.ag. Listen, if you ever put some money into a football game, scored a big win, and then had to wait weeks to collect your cash, that sounds incredibly frustrating. I get my predictions wrong all the time, so I wouldn't really know what it's like to win a game, but there are now thousands of online players who are eliminating that wait time by switching over to MyBookie. You go to mybookie.ag and stop wasting your time on other websites. Play live, partake in in-game betting, and watch the odds change in real time. And remember, it all moves fast, and when you win, you can enjoy no-hassle payouts, so there's nothing holding you back from your victory cash. Join now and get your first deposit match dollar for up to $1,000. On that first deposit, plus if you sign up and make your first deposit within the first 30 minutes of signing up, you get another 10% bonus. What's it take to get that? Just go to mybookie.ag and sign up using the promo code KICKER for your 100% bonus up to $1,000 and do it in your first 30 minutes for another 10%. Remember, sign up and use the promo code KICKER. Then they know that you heard this from me. Visit mybookie.ag today or call 844-900-BETS. That's 844-900-2387 to open your account and start winning today. Use the promo code KICKER to get your 100% deposit bonus and to show the people at MyBookie that they're spending their money wisely when they spend their money supporting this podcast. Expert or rookie, you've got to check out MyBookie.ag. Sign up today with the promo code KICKER. That commercial takes all of my energy away. It's just so much to read and I'm out of breath. But now it's back because we're talking about a new football game. New York Jets at Kansas City Chiefs. Let's go. How's this game going to break down? Let's take a guess at it, huh? Jets head coach Todd Bowles said that Brandon Marshall did not practice on Thursday and Eric Decker was limited. Several players actually missed or were limited, but those are the key guys. Marshall now sounds like he will be a game-time decision. Jamaal Charles could be returning in this game, but is still doubtful. And Charles is sharing the injury report with Philip Gaines and Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, who are both questionable. Ja Reed and Parker Anger are both not expected to play. A lot of injuries to deal with there. Charles, the Chiefs have dealt with so far. It's not like the offense has been great, obviously, if you've been listening to the show the last 45 minutes. But I'm not terribly concerned about the running back position. I'd rather Charles get healthy and then come back whenever he can fire on all cylinders. Losing Philip Gaines would be disastrous, either before the game or any point during the game. The Chiefs are not equipped to deal with backing up Philip Gaines right now. It would be DJ White who would be filling in. I don't want to have to see him deal with Eric Decker or Brandon Marshall for an entire game. I do think it would be White, because I think Nelson has just locked down the slot spot. I would hate to see him moved out of that. So that's going to be a struggle defensively regardless, which I'll break down more here in a second. But Gaines needs to play. LDT needs to play, because Ja Reed and Parker Anger are not going to, it sounds like. So Zach Fulton and LDT get the start at the guard spots, and the Chiefs are kind of staring down the potential of a really unfortunate third stringer having to step up for something. I'm not concerned about LDT and Fulton. I think there is some separation between LDT and Parker Anger right now above the other two guys, just barely. I mean, Parker Anger still has shown a lot of struggles. Overall, LDT, Ja Reed, Anger, and Zach Fulton, you could put them in a barrel of monkeys and just dump two of them out, and I'd be fine with it. LDT's probably had the best preseason and best actual season so far of all of those guys, but especially for that second spot, I'm not all that worried about it. Any of those three guys can play it. So the offensive line, I think, will pretty much just be what it is. As I said last week, we got to get used to talking about the wide receivers for other teams as just what's going to be the key aspect of this matchup, because there is so little experience in the Chiefs secondary, although it does seem like they're settling in, and I do feel pretty good about Peters as the gambler, about Gaines as the steady guy, and about Steven Nelson settling in as the slot man. But this is from at Chiefs Reporter on Twitter. This is an interesting juxtaposition of these guys are going to be facing off here. The Jets' top three wide receivers, Marshall, Decker, and Anunua, averaged 6'3", 223 pounds. The Chiefs' four corners that have taken snaps so far in this season. Marcus Peters, Philip Gaines, Steven Nelson, and DJ White average 5'11", 194 pounds. The Jets have big physical receivers, and the Chiefs are playing with not exactly big physical corners. So just across the board, the Jets are going to have some size advantages here, but I don't think that's a death sentence. This is an athletic group of corners that I think will do enough to keep them just reined in, once again, just enough. Keenan Allen put on a clinic in the first half of the Chargers game, and DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller absolutely got their due in the Texans game, but they were not fatal to the Chiefs defense. Ultimately, because of how Dontari Poe stepped up, which I mentioned earlier, and Chris Jones had a couple of nice plays, the defensive line took a step forward in the Texans game after struggling in week one. The inside linebackers, frankly, stepped up. The entire front seven was better in the Texans game than it was any time in the Chargers game, except for maybe the fourth quarter. We saw kind of the fourth quarter of the Chargers defense, basically the entire game against the Texans. There were big plays, and there were big penalties. But for the most part, you cannot in any way put that Texans game on the Chiefs defense, which I think gives you the right to be enthusiastic about the defense's chances against the Jets at home. Brock Osweiler has a huge arm, but he can make some mistakes. Ryan Fitzpatrick is a poor man's Alex Smith most of the time. I think the Chiefs defense can deal with that. Fitzpatrick has very good weapons. Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker is a really, really, really good 1-2 punch. But I don't think it's a better 1-2 punch than DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller were last week. And the Chiefs did their job there. If Peters can allow a little bit, and really, Peters and Gaines both, if they can allow a few fewer big plays, cut back those on those one or two times, and make the same number of plays they were making as far as getting the ball back, I think the secondary is going to hold up okay in this game. Not as well even as it did in Houston, because I think that was a little bit fluky. But if the defensive line can bother Ryan Fitzpatrick is not a guy who is going to do big things while under pressure. I'm not afraid of him really beating a blitz or Fitzpatrick finding a check down in a bunch of space because Derek Johnson comes up the middle. If you can rattle Ryan Fitzpatrick, he will stay rattled. I'm not at all concerned about Ryan Fitzpatrick's poise under pressure. And if he does end up winning this game while being poised under pressure, good for the Jets. That's how this game is going to go then. Because the Chiefs do need to sell out to make sure Fitzpatrick is under pressure. Don't give him time, and more importantly, don't give those receivers time to separate from the Chiefs' young corners. Because with enough time, as I said last week, with enough time, the offense always wins. With the exception of that one play I mentioned earlier from the Texans game, rushing three guys is not the way to go here, at least in my estimation. Don't rush three guys and give Ryan Fitzpatrick 8 seconds, because eventually, one of those three guys, Marshall, Decker, or Inunua, is going to get some space, and Fitzpatrick's going to hit it. He's going to find it. That's how it's going to work with Fitzpatrick not under pressure. Devote the guys to get to him, and I think the defense will do its job again. What does that mean on the offensive side of the ball for the Chiefs, from an offense that has been so many things, most of them negative? Well, the Jets defense has been pretty good under Todd Bowles, and there are several guys that you might recognize on the, especially along the defensive line. Sheldon Richardson from Mizzou, Leonard Williams, those guys playing on the left side right now. Over on the right side of the defense is Muhammad Wilkerson, who is a scary man. The defensive line is going to be an incredible challenge for not only Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz, but also whoever ends up playing those guard spots, and from Mitch Morse, Steve McClendon in the middle. That's a defensive line that's going to be trying to press up on Alex Smith all day long, and if those guys are getting pressure, then they don't have to ask for much help from their linebackers, and they get to stay deeper into coverage, giving the Chiefs' already sketchy group of wide receivers a little more trouble, especially making it easier for them to deal with the Chiefs' tight ends, which is one of the greatest strengths in this offense, I think. Darrell Revis has struggled, though, this year, and has gotten a lot of flack throughout Twitter and the media and whatnot about it. The Jets so far this year, they lost their first game of the year against the Cincinnati Bengals 23-22 as a Bengals victory. So giving up 23 points to the Bengals in Cincinnati, at home in New York, and then at the Bills, they gave up 31 points, although they did win that game with 37 points of their own. Another thing on the offense that I failed to mention is that Matt Forte is the running back and has been good. And I keep forgetting that he even is on that team, because I keep forgetting he's in the league. The Jets' offense has been very good so far, but I think in a lot of cases they haven't dealt with the kind of pressure that the Chiefs are going to be forced to bring here. And I understand that Tamba Hali and Dee Ford are not guys that you have a lot of confidence in right now. I don't either. You shouldn't have confidence in those guys right now. But it's going to have to be, it's going to fall to Bob Sutton to somehow create enough pressure that rattles Ryan Fitzpatrick a little bit. I think the secondary will hold up just fine, all things considered. I'm not super confident, but that's the best I can do right now. And I'm not terribly concerned about Matt Forte. The run defense looked much better last week than it did in week one, even though Lamar Miller still got some decent yards per carry and got plenty of work. I think Matt Forte gets held back just fine. I think the secondary does its job. But if Ryan Fitzpatrick has all day, then that's not going to matter, because it's going to look like the secondary isn't doing its job. It's going to look like Matt Forte has a lot of space, because as they're trying to create pressure in different ways, Forte's job becomes easier. It becomes easier to find those gaps along the defensive line, because the linebackers are coming for Fitzpatrick. As guys have to come to get Fitzpatrick, the more holes open up in the secondary, and Fitzpatrick will find them. That's the key to this game for me. And I know that it's cliche, I know that it's easy to say, well, the key to this game is to pressure the quarterback. Yeah, no kidding. It is for every quarterback in football. Every quarterback gets worse under pressure, blah, blah, blah. I know. I understand. But in this case, it becomes even more vital to continually reemphasize, because the Chiefs haven't been very good at it with this current crop of guys. And I know that Ryan Fitzpatrick will ultimately, I'm pretty confident, that Ryan Fitzpatrick will fold under enough pressure. Something shocking to me is that over at mybookie.ag, in the prediction of this game brought to you by mybookie.ag, the Chiefs are -3 at home, saying it would be -3 for the Jets in New York, and it would be an even game at a neutral site. I think I would have this game as a pick'em in Kansas City. I don't have a whole lot of confidence. Once again, last week I immediately regretted picking the Chiefs, because I tend to side with the home teams in games like this, where it seems very, very even. I'm going to take the Chiefs by exactly 3 here, 23-20, with a lot of field goals and a stressful game. I think Fitzpatrick makes a couple of mistakes. Maybe one of them ends up as a turnover. If two of them do, the Chiefs should be in good shape. They've got to keep... The Spencer Ware turnover was fluky. The snap over the head of Alex Smith was fluky. And the fumble that Alex Smith had while scrambling ended up not actually being a big deal. But they've got to cut down on putting the ball out there like that. They've got to cut down on those penalties that we saw last week, and something that seemed so out of character for this Chiefs team. And Andy Reid and this offense have got to do something different in the first half, because they could not turn the ball over at all, and they could not have a single penalty in this game. But if they come out and just start the first three quarters with three and outs, it's none of that's going to matter, because the secondary is going to get the defense will be exhausted by being on the field all of the time. The pressure will wane. The coverage will get worse. Remember, the offense always wins when they get time. As time goes by, the offense winning that play gets more and more likely. That's why all of this is so important here to me. And Ryan Fitzpatrick is the absolute, like, base level guy to prove that. Give him enough time, he'll win you football games. Rattle him, he will lose you football games. I feel pretty good about that. Take that for what you will. I think that's how the Chiefs win this game. I think they do win this game, but man, I would be actually, even though I'm saying 23-20, if I had to put a dollar on either end of that line, I would be very attracted to the Jets +3. Let's go around the AFC West. Broncos linebacker DeMarcus Ware had surgery on a fractured right forearm. He will miss 4 to 5 weeks, according to Gary Kubiak. That will not cover a Chiefs-Broncos game, but that is a blow to the Broncos defense. Last week around the AFC West, the Broncos beat the Colts at home in Denver, the Raiders lost to the Falcons at home in Oakland, and the Chargers crushed the Jags at home in San Diego. Last week, all three non-Chiefs AFC West teams were at home. This week, all three AFC West teams other than the Chiefs are on the road. So I'll take the Bengals to beat the Broncos in Cincinnati. The Bengals are 1-1 after barely winning that game in New York that I mentioned just a second ago against the Jets, and losing by 8 points in Pittsburgh against a great Steelers team. I'll take the Bengals to bring the Broncos down a peg in the Broncos' first road game. I'll also take the Raiders to slide by the Titans in Tennessee, and I think the Colts get their first win of the year at home against the Chargers. So it would be a mediocre week. Any week where the Broncos lose and the Chiefs win, that's the key right now. And frankly, if that happens, if the Chiefs do pull it together at home against the Jets and the Broncos do slide to the Bengals in Cincinnati, all of a sudden, two teams that are 2-1 at the top of the division, it could be a whole lot worse than that. That is going to do it for the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on arrowheadaddict.com, on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. You can follow me on Twitter at jbbriscoe, facebook.com/rtkshow, patreon.com/rtk. So many ways to give feedback on this show, and I hope that you will. I love doing the takes and takeaways after the games on Sundays. So you can always send those to me on Twitter with the hashtag RTKTT. And now we play a waiting game. I hope you had a chance to listen to this entire hour of this show before the Chiefs kick off at 3:25 on Sunday against the Jets. A 3:25 home game, which is weird. But I'm fine with it because it gives us more time to listen to this show and to psychologically prepare for the fact that, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I think right now we're just waiting on Andy Reid's philosophy of offense to evolve, which, similar to like Darwinistic evolution, could take a few hundred million years before we really see anything worthwhile. I'm not super optimistic. As always, thank you for listening. Bye, Mom.
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass?